The Book Nook on WISO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Good morning. You're listening to The Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McInnes, and I'd like to welcome to the program this morning Shuley Kaywood, and she's come to our studios here in Yellow Springs. Good morning, Shuley.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Shuley, I understand that you are in town for some kind of a special event. What is it?
I am doing a book signing for both of my books at Sam and Eddie's today from 12 to 2.
You are?
I am. I'm very excited about it. Well, I love being in my hometown and working with Sam and Eddie's bookshop.
We appreciate you getting up so bright and early to join us here.
Of course.
At WISO. Where is this bookshop?
This bookshop is in King's Yard off Xenia Avenue in downtown Yellow Springs.
And you've written two books? That's right, because we've had you on the show for both of these books. Now I remember.
Well, great. Yes, I have two books, The Going Goodbye, which is a memoir. And then my latest book is called 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17, and that came out last year.
Okay, we have some listeners out there who did not hear those previous interviews, so let's start off by talking about your memoir, The Going and Goodbye. Why? Why did Shuley Kaywood decide to write about herself?
Wow, that's a big question. I had some stories that I wanted to tell from my life, and what ended up being in the book actually became other stories that I hadn't anticipated. So I ended up wanting to talk about one or two romantic relationships in my life. And as happens with many things in life, you realize that they are connected to other stories in your life. And so a lot of other things came into the book when it finally ended up being a book.
Tell us about the structure of it. Is it written in a linear structure? What's your approach in this?
It is a book that goes back and forth in time, and it is not a linear structure. It's not chronological, although I will say that characters are developed over time. And by characters, I'm talking about real people. But the people in the book are developed over time, and so you learn more about them as the book goes on, just as in a novel.
And some of the names were changed to protect the innocent?
Correct. Two of the names were changed. The rest are all the real names.
These are old boyfriends that you changed the names on?
Correct. Mm-hmm. There are two former boyfriends that I had, and those two I changed their names. One is an ex-husband, actually.
Well, that's very nice. All right, so let's talk about the things that you wrote about. Why did you choose particular memories or events to discuss in your memoir?
I wanted to talk about love relationships that had come in my life and gone from my life, and how I particularly had lost myself through some of those relationships, and how I came to find myself again, not through the relationships, but through letting them go from my life. And that is part of why the title is The Going and Goodbye. And that ended up being connected to other things in my life, like my town. There's a lot of Yellow Springs in there, and how I grew up and my family and leaving Yellow Springs and how hard that was, because Yellow Springs is a great love of mine still to this day. And there's a chapter in there that's about my friend Safi, and she was also a great love in my life, not a romantic love, but a friend who really shaped who I was and helped me grow and become someone different than I had been in the ways that I needed to. And so there's a chapter about her. There's a chapter about my dog and how she came to help me grow and be a more patient person and more loving person.
So it's the going and goodbye, the losses and the gains?
Correct. That would be an accurate summary.
My guest is Shuley Kaywood, and she joins us in studio this morning. She's come back to her hometown. Where are you living now?
I live in Johnson City, Tennessee, which is in the very northeast corner of Tennessee.
And how is that community different from Yellow Springs?
The community is, well, first of all, it's a mountain town, so we live in the foothills of the mountains. It's a much bigger city. It's about 65,000 people versus little tiny Yellow Springs. So I'm not really known there. I didn't grow up there. My husband did, so he's known there, but I'm not. And it's much more conservative than Yellow Springs.
Didn't President Trump hold a rally there last year?
He did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Johnson City. They were rocking at the, was some kind of an auditorium?
I think so. I did not attend.
Okay. Do you want to read something from your memoir? Is there an excerpt that you'd like to share with our listeners? Give them a little flavor of the Shuley Caywood style.
Sure. I'll read from a chapter that is a little bit about Ohio and Yellow Springs. This chapter is called The Curious Thing About Doubt and Faith. In the early mornings of the spring I turned 29, the season before I married Rob, I drove on a stretch of Ohio's Route 68 to work I loved. I liked it best when the road showed up for me alone, when I could steer in a kind of solitary silence from village to rural county, from Epic Books and Haha Pizza to the intersection with Cemetery Road, and then past pastures, swaths of farmland, and the occasional framed house onto which the sunlight warmed the lives of families rising into day. I had known the road for so long, not just the corn and soybean fields, but also Young's Jersey Dairy with its red barn and white fence, Ebenezer Cemetery with its crumbling cement wall, the turnoffs for Sparrow, Collier, and Cottingham Roads, even Walt's the junkyard where the highway dog-legged. Yet that spring, I studied each moment of the way as if remembering it well meant somehow I could keep it. Back then, I wanted to believe in beginnings, but I can see now I held on to the ends.
Is Ebenezer the cemetery out in Husted? The one you drive by that's got the monuments that are kind of tippy?
I think it's technically in Husted. That's uh-huh. the area, yes.
Uh-huh. What is it about the community of Yellow Springs that's special to you?
I was very lucky and I had a wonderful childhood here. I have very loving parents who raised me with a lot of love and care and attention. And I really thrived in a small town. I think some people don't. They like a city. I like a small town where I know people and people know me. There's a safety to that. I understand there are negative parts of that where you feel like your life is sort of on display. But I really appreciate the positive parts and I miss that a lot. I miss knowing people and people knowing me and having that security.
What made you decide to become a writer?
I wanted to write ever since I was as far back as I can remember. My dad is a writer. I'm sure that influenced me. And I began writing little stories when I was very young and then switched to poetry in high school. And then only as an adult have I come back to writing stories and essays and memoir.
And then you went off to Wittenberg.
I did, not far from home. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to go so close to home, actually. I looked at colleges far away, but I fell in love with Wittenberg when I went to see the campus. And it was still, I still think it was the best choice for me.
Are you excited about having a hometown book signing later today?
I'm very, very excited. I love working with Sam Eckenrode whenever I get the chance to. When my memoir first debuted, I actually worked with her to do an opening and have a speaking event with Denise Jacobs, who also had a book coming out. So any chance I can get to work with Sam is always fun.
And Sam is the owner of the bookstore where you're going to be this afternoon. What's the information again on the bookstore?
It is, the signing is from 12 to 2, and it's Sam and Eddie's Open Books. I wish I had the address on me. I don't. It's off Senior Avenue in King's Yard.
That's good enough. It's a small town. People
it
will find it. Isn't Sam involved with you in some kind of a publishing venture?
We both own Cimarron Books, and we co-own it. So she publishes some books by Liz Kelly through it, and then I publish my own things through it.
Who was Liz Kelly?
Liz Kelly was a great spiritual teacher who lived in Yellow Springs. I knew her when she was an adult. I'm not sure if she was born here, but she was a great friend of my father's and my family's.
And this imprint, Cimarron Books, was something that was passed along through your dad, right?
And so my dad began it so he could publish Liz's book. He actually wrote it for Liz and published it under Cimarron Books.
And last year, right before Christmas, you published a book on your own imprint, and it's called 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17. And we're going to talk about that book. But first, we need to take a break. The Book Nook will continue on WYSO right after this. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. Since 1958, it's the Book Nook. Hope you're having a pleasant morning, and thanks for tuning in. Today, I have a guest in studio, bright and early. Her name is Shuli Kaywood, and she is the author of a memoir called The Going and Goodbye. During the first segment, we talked about her memoir. And now we're going to talk about a book that she put out last year. It's called 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17. Now, what on earth possessed you to write something like this?
That's a great question. I have no idea. I had started this book back, I don't even remember when I started it. I wrote a first draft a while ago, and it was like a letter to a younger self, if you've seen those kind of books out there. And I started thinking about the things that I wish I had known when I was 17 and that I could have told myself when I was younger that would have helped me a lot about what was to come in my life. And I began to write this book that is really, they're numbered. There are actually 52 things. There's one thing on each page. And I don't even know what to call this book. I call it a little inspirational gift book because it's very short. It's not a memoir. It's not short stories. It's not poems, although they look like poems in the page, but they're not intended to be poems. And that's how the book came to be.
Would you find it in the self-help section at your better bookstores?
Either that or inspirational books.
Inspirational. Okay. And this is going to be one of the books that you're going to be signing for people who attend your book signing this afternoon here in Yellow Springs. And I'm picturing you, this is a very slender volume, but I'm picturing you behind this towering stack of thousands of copies of this that you're going to be signing this afternoon. Tell us more about this book signing that you're going to be having.
Well, I will be signing the two books, talking to people, but it's also almost National Poetry Month. National Poetry Month starts on April 1st, so I've actually brought some of my poems to hand out to anybody who buys a book, and I'll be handing those out because I'm very, very excited about National Poetry Month.
They get a free poem if they buy a book?
A free poem, yes. Exciting.
That's, Robert Pashel would be jealous of you. You know who Robert Pashel is, don't you?
I do. Mm-hmm. He's welcome to come on by and join in the fun.
He's a local legend here in Yellow Springs, a poet. And if you come out to Yellow Springs on the weekends, a lot of times you'll see him. He also is a T-shirt designer, and he makes these funny puns that he puts on the T-shirts. And then he has a little tent set up downtown, and he has these – and he loves interacting with people coming through town. And yesterday – or not yesterday, but last Saturday, I walked past him, and I heard him say to someone, "Do you want to hear my poem?"
Well, good for
him. And these people were from out of town, and they're like, sure. And he was loving that. He was loving sharing his poetry. So you're going to be sharing your poetry with people who are interested in your books.
This is true. I'm excited. I love sharing poetry. And who doesn't love a fun poem?
Tell us more about the things you wish you could have told yourself when you were 17. What are some of the things? Give us some examples.
The book really varies from kind of funny to more serious. So I'll give you a lighter one. Number 15 is, drinking diet sodas will have the same effect on you that some of your dating choices will have. It will increase your cravings for something naturally sweet.
Hmm. Okay. I don't drink diet soda. I guess I've missed out.
You haven't. I used to. I haven't in a long time.
Okay.
It's good to give it up.
I used to like real soda.
Well,
yeah, I used to like Mountain Dew. That was good.
I have no comment about that.
had caffeine in it. I didn't know that when I was a little kid. I was wondering why I liked it so much. Remember when they used to have the bottles and it would say the name of the people that filled the bottle? You don't probably remember that. You're too young.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. We used to go down to the fire station and they had a little 10-cent pop machine. We go in there and pull out the bottle of Mountain Dew and it'd say, filled by Ed and Dave. but we digress. My guest is Shuli Kaywood, and we're talking about her book, 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17. And I can think of some things that I wish I could have told myself when I was 17, but I've gotten to the point in my life where I kind of forgotten what those things are.
Well, so much for that book.
I don't think you've already written the book. What kind of response have you gotten to it?
I've had really, really a nice response from people. I've had people write on Amazon or write me directly, you know, do a little review on Amazon or Goodreads. And I've had people write me directly. I've had people say they want to give this to their 17-year-old. My mother-in-law actually said she wanted to give it to her grandchild, who's 13, and she was very excited about it, the 13-year-old. So it's always nice to feel like I'm making a difference in someone's life, even small.
Do you frequently look at sites like Amazon and Goodreads just to see what kind of things people are saying about your books? Is this something that you like to do? Does it make you nervous? Do you get people that say things that you don't like?
Well, there's always people who will say things you don't like. I actually don't look at them very frequently. I used to, when my first book came out, The Going Goodbye, came out, I looked at it all the time, pretty much every day. And then I remember Roxane Gay said that reviews are for readers, they're not for the writer. And I took that to heart. I mean, she didn't say it to me directly. I don't know Roxane Gay, though I would love to. And I took that to heart, and I stopped looking at them so much because I realized it's not like I was going to change the book. And so I couldn't address what was making people unhappy about it. For the most part, they're 98% great reviews. I don't think I have any bad reviews so far on the 52 things. There are one or two people who are unhappy with Going Goodbye. They thought it was a how-to book, and it's not. It's a memoir. So they were looking for direction, I think, with the memoir on how to deal with loss. And that's not what the book is. So I wasn't going to be able to fulfill their hopes and dreams.
They thought your memoir was a how-to book?
Correct.
Now, how did they get that impression?
I have absolutely no idea.
Wonder what they were expecting to teach them.
How to deal with grief and loss.
Well, I think that that's apropos for that book. I mean, you teach that in a way, your own way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I would say in a sideways sort of way, not directly like, one, you should get out of bed. Two, you should that kind of thing. I think that's what they were expecting. And that's fine. So that's not the book it is, and I don't want to write that book. So I don't look at the reviews very frequently. Every once in a while, every couple months, I'll check and see how it's going. But I try not to look at them. They can be hard to look at.
I know from talking to you about it that you like to write in places that are kind of busy. You like to write in a certain coffee shop here in town. You actually said you were making progress on your novella that you're revising, working at a coffee shop. Tell us about what you're working on and why that atmosphere is conducive for you to write.
I have a specific table that I like to write at. And I love the Emporium. I think it's actually when I go, it's often quiet. But even if it's bustling, I like it. I like being around people but not necessarily interacting a lot. I'm fine if someone comes up and says hello, but I don't want to sit there and chat while I'm trying to write. I like the warmth and noise of the place. I think it's sort of like how I think of Yellow Springs. It gives me a sense of security and home, and it just makes it an easy place to write. And right now I'm working on a novella. I actually wrote the novella a few years ago. I'm the kind of writer who does not outline what's going to happen in a book or even a story. I never know what's going to happen. It's the surprise that actually interests me in terms of writing. So I am able to now look at the novella now that it's done, or at least the first draft is done, and go back and revise it and see what's missing. But I never could have worked on it on that level at the beginning. I first write a big draft of it. So I'm working on that right now. It's a relationship story. It's about two people in love. No surprise, I'm writing about love again. But it's obviously fiction.
Why is it obvious that
because
it's fiction?
Because it's a novella, not a memoir, not an essay.
Okay. I would find it very difficult to write in a hectic atmosphere. People are saying, well, you don't write anything, Vic. Well, actually, yeah, I do write book reviews that appear on Sundays in the Dayton Daily News and the Springfield News Sun, and I have deadlines every week. And when I'm on deadline, I don't want any noise. I don't want any distraction. I know there's people that like to write in coffee shops like you do. There's people that write listening to music. I would find that very distracting. I have to have silence and quiet.
Sure, I understand that. I wonder now, I think there are a lot of writers who like to write in coffee shops, but my theory is that part of why I like the noise is because I'm an extrovert, and most writers are not extroverts. But that doesn't mean that there aren't introverted writers who don't like to write in. I mean, there are many introvert writers, I'm sure, who like to write in coffee shops. But because I'm extroverted, I'm a little bit an anomaly within the writer world.
You're really an extrovert? You're not teasing me and kidding me, are you?
No. I'm an extrovert. And okay. I know of two other writers in my peer group who are extroverts, and the rest are all introverts.
The extroverts?
I hang with everybody.
Okay. And what is this peer group you're talking about? Who are these people?
I have two peer groups. I have my cohort from Antioch Writers Workshop. They're people I met while going through that from summer to summer, people I love and I still keep in touch with. In fact, two are coming up for my book signing.
Wow.
Today from Cincinnati. And then I did a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing through Queen's University in Charlotte, and I still keep in touch with about eight people from there, a mix of introverts and extroverts, and I'm still in very close touch. We are in communication almost daily, and those are my friends from that program.
Do you let them read your draft work, your manuscript work? Do you get people that are your first readers who give you feedback, or do you keep that to yourself?
I definitely get feedback from people. I have a writing buddy who's actually not from either program. She's someone I used to work with who's a writer. We were both writers in an organization called IntraHealth International. And she and I exchange work every month, and so she always sees everything that goes to publication pretty much. I really trust her eye as an editor. She's great at giving feedback. Everything goes through her. The other person that almost everything goes through is Emily Fine, who's from Yellow Springs. She is the host of The Book Cougars. She's a big reader, has her own podcast for books, and she reads almost all of what I write and gives me good feedback.
The Book Cougars, huh? That's an interesting name. My guest is Shuley K. Wood. Her book is 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17. And she also is the author of a memoir called The Going and Goodbye. And she's going to be in town later today for a book signing here in Yellow Springs. Give us some more examples of some of the things you wish you could have told yourself when you were 17, please.
I will give you a serious one.
Okay.
Your breasts will fight off cancer a dozen times over many years, and though you will feel weak every time you cry at your mammogram appointment, their ultimate lesson will be to prove you are strong.
Hmm. That's intense.
It is intense. Some of these are more, like I said, more serious than others, but I think that a lot of people can probably relate to mammogram appointments.
Hmm. Shuley, you mentioned a moment ago that April is coming up and that it's going to be some kind of special month. What is special about April? Remind me.
It's National Poetry Month every April.
And you just like to read poetry, right? Or do you just like to write poetry? Is it one or the other, or is it both?
I love to do both. And during National Poetry Month, I feature other people's poems on my blog. I've done this. This is going to be my third year in a row doing it. And I actually fourth year in a row doing it. And last year I teamed up with one of my MFA peers, Robert McCrady, and he loves to recite poetry on YouTube. So I would pick a poem, I would put it on my blog, write about it, and then he would record it on YouTube and we would link together and then we'd blast it on social media and try to give a poet some coverage.
What's your blog address?
It's if you go to my website, which is www.shuleykwood.com, which is shuleykwood.com, you can just click on blog and you'll find it.
Okay. And coming up just in a couple of days on April Fool's Day, you'll have your first post for National Poetry Month?
I'm going to do it on Tuesdays, every Tuesday of the month.
Okay. So you're going to skip April Fool's Day. That just seems like an ideal time to start.
Well, it's a good idea. Maybe I'll switch the date. Who knows?
Okay. Well, we've had you on the program three times before. The first time we had you on was for The Going and Goodbye, your memoir. And then we had you on again last year, and you read some poetry for us. And then we had you on right before the holidays last year for your book, 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17. And you have this book signing coming up today in which you're going to be signing copies of these two books. And also you've got these poems you're going to be handing out. And these are your poems and these are unpublished poems?
They're all published, actually, okay. Individually.
Okay. Tell us again about the venue you're going to be at today.
I'll be at Sam and Eddie's Open Books from 12 to 2 doing a signing. And it is located in King's Yard, which is off Xenia Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you read poetry on the show before?
Yes.
Do you remember that we had a dueling poetry reading?
Yes.
Okay. And when I had you on, I brought a book by my favorite poet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who it was?
I don't remember who it was. I just listened to the poem the other day again, but I can't remember the...
Dylan Thomas.
Dylan Thomas.
The Welsh poet. He was my favorite. And I discovered him in high school, and I just loved the way he wrote. And he also had a kind of a tragic, brief life. He was dead by the time he was 39. And supposedly his famous last words, he was touring America, and he was a heavy, heavy drinker. And supposedly the last coherent words he uttered before slipping into his final coma was this: 17 straight whiskeys. I think that's the record. I believe those were his final words. And I don't know why I admired him so much as a youth,
mm-hmm.
but we used to go on pilgrimages. He had been in Iowa City mm-hmm. back in the early 1950s. He had been there for some kind of an event, and we heard that he had been at this Irish tavern that they had in downtown Iowa City. So we would go there, and we would just sit there and soak up the vibe and just imagine him leaning over the counter, yelling and carrying on. Who are the poets that you like to read? I know you're a big Mary Oliver fan who passed away recently. Who are some of your favorites?
Definitely Mary Oliver is at the top of that list. Jane Kenyon, Margaret Atwood, Joyce, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but Pesherow.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably some of my top ones.
I don't know her. Joyce Pesherow?
Pesherow.
Uh-huh.
And I will say I'm not usually a fan of all poems by a poet, so I tend to like individual poems more so than saying, oh, I love everything by this person or I love most of them. Usually it's that I find a poem I love, and so I'll love the poem probably more than the poet.
All right. Well, I'm guessing since you brought all this poetry to Yellow Springs this weekend for your event that you probably have a few spare poems in your possession at this very moment in the studio. So I'm hoping that when we come back after our next break, that maybe you'll share some of your poems with us and maybe even some poems by some poets that you enjoy. Does that sound like something you want to do?
Sure.
Okay. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I've been joined by Shuley Caywood, and we'll continue with some poetry in our final segment of The Book Nook right after this. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I've been joined in studio this morning by Shuley Caywood, and we're talking about her books, The Going and Goodbye, her memoir, and a book she put out just a few months ago called 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17. And Shuley is going to be in Yellow Springs this afternoon signing copies of the book. It's a book signing. And where is that again, Shuley?
It's in Sam and Eddie's Open Books in King's Yard off of Xenia Avenue in downtown Yellow Springs.
And what time is that?
From 12 to 2.
Okay, so that's coming up in just 4.5 hours.
That's right. Get your coffee, get your croissant, come on over and say hello.
Those people that are coming up to see you from Cincinnati, they're probably just now climbing in their car trying to tune you in on the radio, and they're probably going, what's that station again? Oh, it's 91.3 WYSO. And as I mentioned during our last segment, Shuley is also, besides being a memoirist and a self-help advisor, she is a poet. And did you bring some of these poems for us to hear this afternoon or this morning or whenever you're willing to read them?
I absolutely did.
Okay.
I brought in a poem that I am going to be featuring on my blog. this month by – this poem is actually called With Time, and it's by Brian Satram. And I found this poem in Cider Press Review. I actually have had a poem myself published in Cider Press Review. I was very, very fortunate. I really love the site. And I found his poem called With Time. I'm the one to hollow the pumpkin and carve a face. The doorbell rings again. You adore the children tonight in their costumes, a warm night. We have no costumes, just the two of us and the space between forming a shape we keep repeating. My turn to go and hand out candy. We finally threw away the photo from the booth that merged our faces, a composite to show what a daughter of ours might look like. She looked freaky, not being real. This isn't yours alone to carry, isn't your failure. We won't let us drift apart, but there's nothing to work on or figure out. With time, you'll say your body doesn't crave being a mother anymore. You can't say it now, your silence a place into which I don't know how to follow you.
That was Shuley Kaywood reading a poem. What was the author of that poem again?
Brian Satram.
Okay. I don't know him. I discovered a new poem recently, and I want to duel you with poems. Is that cool?
That sounds great.
Okay. I mentioned before during the last segment that I love Dylan Thomas. And recently, I occasionally get these advanced copies of books that are really interesting. And I got this book by a guy named Mark Hamer, or maybe it's Hammer. Anyway, he's Welsh. And the book is an advanced copy that won't be coming out until October. And it's a memoir. It's called How to Catch a Mole and Find Yourself in Nature. He's also a poet. So he's a memoirist and a poet. Does that sound familiar?
Sounds Julie? Very familiar.
And I love the book. I can't really read any of the memoir because it hasn't been published yet. But apparently these poems have already been published in other things, like maybe this Cider Press Review that you're talking about. Anyway, some of these poems really spoke to me. So I'm going to read one right now. It's called 4 a.m. I woke up in a cold, dark room, unable to breathe from a bad dream in which I couldn't breathe. With distance between us, feeling homeless and full of flight, my head beached on the white pillow like a sand-clogged conch. Breath's tide flows in and out noisily, working through the blocked chambers, drowning. In 2 hours, the heating will click on. In 4 hours, the sun will start to rise. In 5 hours, Peggy will wake up. I look out over the thin winter wood where buried things will remain buried until the land is full and the houses come. I feel like I am drowning. With a click, then a boom, the heating comes on. 2 quick dark hours gone already. I've been watching the stars cold and distant, yet always there. Did I sleep again? I'm not sure. From a clear starry night, the unwanted dawn crawls across the rookwood. And beneath the handful of frosted rooftops in the bare-branched wood, the people are waking and scraping their cars. The rooks perch and wait for the warming sun. And I struggle to breathe. Peggy stirs, and her head rolls onto my shoulder, heavy and warm. While the scraping continues, and the crows crowd a bare ash. The beetles beetle. And the crows start to crow. And the nearby river, not yet frozen, still runs in its flow, while Peggy's stale morning breath, steady and deep, keeps me anchored with comfort to blanket and pillow. And flow. I think about the flow. And try not to drown. Light comes in blinking, and Peggy opens her sticky eyes, and in from chasing wood mice across the frosted grass, my icy cat curls her cold fur against my bare feet.
That's a fantastic poem. I love it.
I liked him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Never heard of the guy. Mark Hamer.
Well, now we have.
Yeah, so. Glad you liked it. Do you have another poem for us?
Sure.
Okay.
I brought one that I will again be featuring on my blog in April. And this one is by Barbara Costa Spiggs. And the poem is called How I Spent My Day, 2 years after my father's death. Morning, February, a bit brighter every day. One boy, Cheerios, an argument about sugar. The other, a poached egg. Toast. Sleep stumbling the house in my bathrobe, searching for matching socks. Dump laundry baskets for clean shirts, the right pants for each child. Brew coffee. There's a picture of my father hanging in my dining room. Montana, a window in a barn. Stalk of wheat in his mouth. It's a recreation of a photo taken 45 years ago. Save for the wheat. 45 years ago, it was a Marlboro. Load the dishwasher to save the trouble of doing it in the evening. I wonder why I don't usually do this, but I know why. I'm never this meticulous, this focused in the almost dark of almost spring mornings, or any mornings at all. There's a picture of my father on my living room bookshelf. It's a selfie he sent. He's half in, half out of the frame. Napa, my brother's courtyard, my mother, my brother, his girlfriend waving. Tomato plants vine up the fence. They have glasses of wine, fresh bruschetta. Pull a hot bath. I'm at my mother's house. She is with my brother in Texas. I have wine. I have words rattling in the back of my small dog curls on the bath mat, settles in for as long as I might take. There is a picture of my father with my niece, my father at my brother's wedding, a portrait of my parents on a wedding anniversary, caption, still crazy after 39 years. A photo of my mother and father on her dresser at my uncle's wedding. I've always teased her that she had Marilyn Quayle hair. Start supper, wine stumbling in the kitchen, playlist stuck on America. Alexa, play America. Again, empty and aching, but I don't know why. And I'll end the day the same way it started, dumping the baskets, this time for pajamas, wondering what was out that Montana barn window.
Great imagery in that. Mm-hmm. And I love the mention of Marilyn Quayle because she has been my guest in the book.
Has she really? I did not know that.
Dan Quayle's wife, Marilyn, mm-hmm. wrote a couple of novels with her sister. And this was shortly after Bill Clinton was elected.
Okay.
And you might recall, Bill Clinton had a similar reputation to Donald Trump when he first took office. He loved fast food. He loved the Big Macs.
Yes.
he loved that stuff. And so Marilyn had written this book. And it's a work of fiction about an American president who is eating fast food at his desk in the Oval Office and dies of a heart attack. That's not funny. Okay. Anyway, thanks for mentioning Marilyn Quayle in the book, Nook. We're going to have to go back and find that interview, Peter, and see what that sounds like after all these years. Okay, you read a poem. Do I get to read another poem by Mark Hamer?
I suppose I'll let you.
You'll let me? Okay, here we go. This has no title. At 7 a.m., I took her tea in her big white mug. She smiled her wakened smile from our white bed, slatted with diagonal lines of cold sunlight. I ate porridge, pulled on thick wool socks and boots, and left, driving my van to the red-edged morning sky through narrow country lanes and to the hills. The invincible planets move on, and creatures stir, and drawn to play my part as if on a chain with a ring through my nose, I drive the A-roads that coil through small towns and villages and tie people's lives together. The dry copper bracken rolls in redhead waves to black mountains crushed squat and bowed, under heavy-watered blue-black ink-flat cloud and round-to-corner slashes of sunlight flashing off the jagged river far below. Then, in the dip, autumn's muted shades, distant trees ghostly in dawn's cloud, and the flat-topped, flailed, leafless hedges glow pink in the morning sun. As I drive my little van between neat hedges singing, into a mist-filled dip, then up a hill, and suddenly, I'm looking into clear blue sky, and I am not at home anymore.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I like him. And I didn't think I'd like the book. He's a mole catcher. And I didn't think I'd like the mole catching part, because mm-hmm. I like moles. And most people don't like them, but I like them. When I see a mole digging something in my yard, I smile. I don't run out there and scream, "Get out of my yard, you mole." I think they have a right to do that. And according to this guy, moles have these very definite characteristics. They're solitary. Unless they're mating, they want to be completely alone.
Hmm.
The males, go in straight lines. The females go in lines that go all over the place. He's got all this really interesting information about moles in here. And so when I'm in my yard and I'm watching the cat, watching the mole, digging the hole, I try to decide, now, is it a male or a female under there? And then the mole sticks his little pink hands up, and I run and grab the cat so that the cat can't grab the mole. My guest is Shuley Caywood, and we're talking about her books. And you're going to be talking about your books later today, aren't you? Are you going to give a talk at this book signing?
I'm not. It's just a book signing, but I'm happy to talk to anybody who wants to come and ask questions and have a chat with me.
There's no performance?
There's no performance for this one.
You're just going to be sitting there with a huge pile of books, and people are going to come walking in, and they're going to say,
it's going to be a crowd, Vic, a crowd of people.
And they're going to say, I want a poem.
That's right. Hopefully.
And then are you going to read them a poem, or are you just going to hand them a piece of paper and say, go away?
I'm going to get on a stage and read it out loud and hope that the whole town hears me.
Are you really?
No.
Okay. Tell us more about this event.
This event came about. There was somebody actually who asked me if I was going to be signing books in Yellow Springs, somebody who's from Yellow Springs. And so I decided to work with Sam to do it and to come into town. And she's always carried my books, which I really appreciate. It can be hard to get your books in a bookstore, and Sam's been great about that. So I wanted to not only sell some of my books, but also wanted to bring some people into Sam and Eddie's. It's a lovely bookshop. It has a lot of nice selection. Whenever I have wanted to read a book and I'm in town, I'll often go and ask Sam. She and I have very similar taste, and so she'll find good books for me.
Well, I like going in there because when I look at the books, I see all these books that are by writers that have appeared on this program, and I say to myself, you know, these people have good taste. I like that. And they're located where again?
They're in King's Yard off of Xenia Avenue in downtown Yellow Springs.
And that's today from noon until?
Till 2 o'clock.
And if there's still people lined up all the way down Xenia Avenue at 2 o'clock, will you stay longer?
Probably not.
Okay. Just curious. At one time I went to a book signing in Chicago for David Sedaris.
Oh, I bet that was really crowded.
It was actually at a gay bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And the proprietors of the bookstore, believe it or not, did not want him to do the book signing there. But he insisted on it. And when we got there, the bookstore was supposed to close at 7. We actually came. I was with another guy. We came to pick up David Sedaris because he was supposed to be finished with the book signing. We were going to take him somewhere. And we got there at 8 o'clock, and there was a line going all the way out. And it went for about 2 blocks, all the way out the bookstore. All these people were in line. And he stayed there, and he kept signing. And he signed until 10 o'clock at night. And every person that came up, he would chat with them. And they just loved it.
Well,
and the owners of the bookstore are standing there glaring. They didn't like it. So why is it hard? You mentioned it's hard to get your books into bookstores. What's difficult about it? Is it just getting them to pay attention to you, getting them to realize that this is a book they should be carrying?
Right. I don't have a publicist. So a lot of someone like David Sedaris is not only going to have an agent, he's going to have a publicist. He's also famous, so it's not hard to get into any bookstore if you're David Sedaris. But if you don't have a publicist who's out there trying to get you into bookstores and to get you on that front table when people walk in, it's really difficult. So I'm my own publicist. I'm doing it all on my own. So I've tried to work with whatever local bookstores. Really, Sam's been great. There's a bookstore in Charlotte where my sister lives, and they've carried my books. But I don't even have a local bookstore where I live.
Well, I found it interesting that the proprietors of this bookstore did not want him to be there. It was disruptive to them.
I don't really understand it.
Yeah, well, he kind of pushed his way in, apparently, and that's what I understand. Shuley, I think we have enough time for you to read another poem, and if it's not a super long one, then maybe I'll read another one too.
Okay. I don't know how super long it is, but I'll read one of mine that's not published yet.
Okay.
It's called Perhaps It Is Useless to Tell You Now. So it's called Perhaps It Is Useless to Tell You Now That I Still Remember the Long Drive to Indiana to See Your Parents, the way the highway became a seam down the fabric of your life before and after me. Out of morning fog, their gray barn emerged. One window's glass cracked like a cobweb. An animal scrabbled around the attic above the bedroom where I stayed, and in the morning your mother fried eggs that your father poked with a fork and said were too cold. The dog broke loose one afternoon, and your father sent us out to find him, and we were young enough then to think it was easy to bring anything back, and we drove miles down country lanes, winding past creeks and weeping willows, over bridges that made us bump in our seats until we tracked him down, wet and panting, his fur muddy yet warm. It was summer, after all, and the light cared less that season how late and long anyone stayed out. It woke us early anyway. Your parents kept a picture on the mantel of the last girl you loved, and she smiled at the lot of us as your father flipped channels, landing on Wheel of Fortune. I wonder now if luck had anything to do with us, if we had more or less or none at all, but thought we did, how long such a belief sustained us. We ate chocolate ice cream after your father went to bed. You held the spoon under hot water. You washed the yellow bowl afterward and put it away so no one would know. You hung your mother's dish rag, gray and limp, on its hook. I never returned to Indiana, never smelled the split-open crabapples fallen on the autumn floor, never heard the ice crack in the pond behind the house that winter, never witnessed the white seeds of dandelions escape their stems in spring. By then, I was in Mexico, already forgetting how you stole into my room in your father's house, or I stole into yours, how there was a time when rules would not keep us apart.
Shuli Kaywood reading her poetry here in the Book Nook, and she'll be at Sam and Eddie's this afternoon from noon until 2, signing copies of her memoir, The Going and Goodbye, and her other book, which is I call it a self-help book, 52 Things I Wish I Could Have Told Myself When I Was 17, and I have just enough time, I think, to read one more poem by this guy like Mark Hamer. No title. I need to preface this by saying, apparently this guy, when he was 16, his mother died. And his father, a couple months later, said, okay, time for you to move on. And he basically booted the kid out of the house. And then he went and lived outside for a couple of years, sleeping in hedgerows and just wandering the countryside, and he loved it. So I think this is inspired in some part by those experiences. Eating the apples that nobody picked, half a dozen blackbirds or more. They know nothing. They make no plans for the future, yet they prepare for winter. Toad flops by while I kneel, and we are equal, and I fall in love again. A solitary heathen. Running water meeting rock makes sparks run up my spine. I am exposed. I can never return from here. Pines dark green reach high and swing against a sky, ice blue and clear, and in their shade there's frost and shelter. I imagine a bivy for the night, and waking glittering cold, making morning tea on a smoky twig fire. I am a stag. I am a fox. I am a carp. I am a rook. I am a naked, forked animal wrapped in wool with mud on my hands. Mark Hamer.
Wow.
I like that book.
Yeah, he's lucky that you're reading so much of it. That's fabulous.
Well, apparently these poems have been published previously in other publications, but they'll be put together at the ends of these chapters in his memoir coming out in October, but we're not pitching Mark Hamer today. We're pitching Shuli Kaywood, and thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.